Hello and welcome to In the Booth on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. I'm Brendan Batchelor, as always, joined by Randy Janda. And we're broadcasting this week from the campus of the University of British Columbia. We're actually recording here on Friday afternoon, taking in the UBC women's team and their practice as we were here watching the Canucks practice earlier. And Randy, In the Booth is brought to you by Bells and Whistles.
That's right. Catch all the action, hockey, football, soccer, and more with happy hour pints for $6.75, $32.96 Fraser Street, right in the Fraser Hood.
And the Canucks coming off an important shootout victory over the Calgary Flames earlier in the week, the second half of a back-to-back, and a game that they really had to have after losing to Montreal. A gritty comeback performance, the first time they've won this season when trailing going into the third period, and what better time to get that win than on a night where they were facing the team that they've been chasing for much of the second half in the playoff race.
Yeah, it was a massive game. It had all the lead-up, all the playoff implication discussion that we were having, but not only us, the national hockey media was also discussing it. And the game had a little bit of everything. Obviously, getting Quinn Hughes back for the Vancouver Canucks was important. And I got to start there with that game. Nearly 30 minutes of ice time for Quinn Hughes. We know he's not in the right way or 100%. He's battling something. And the fact that he can put 30 minutes of ice time, 4 minutes of possession time, nearly 90 seconds of ozone possession time, and just be well ahead of everybody else in that regard, just willing his team. I don't know how you can't get up for a game like that if you're the Vancouver Canucks when your captain is not feeling right, but he's still putting in that sort of effort, and the team responded. They had a good first period. Second period was kind of so-so, and the third period, when they were down, they responded, and they absolutely dominated, taking that game to overtime.
Yeah, and you could see the impact that Hughes had, even though he's probably not at 100%, probably battling through to get back into the lineup. And he spoke after practice on Friday about not feeling like it was rushed, feeling like the medical staff handled it well, that it made sense for him to come back when he did. And he talked a lot about looking forward to the games that are coming up, and we're going to talk about those in a moment. But I thought one of the biggest things that I took away from Quinn Hughes against the Flames, certainly his performance on the ice, but his comments after the game on the broadcast with Ryan Leslie talking about Elias Pettersson and basically backing his guy, giving him a vote of confidence, trying to, you know, boost him off of one of Elias Pettersson's best games of the season. And I know we're going to talk about Pettersson in the mailbag later on in the show because we've got that coming up later on. But that was a moment where I said, okay, Quinn Hughes showed some real leadership here, not just coming back into the lineup, playing as much as he did, playing in as much in overtime as he did, but also backing up his guy on the broadcast afterwards and saying, you know, Petey can be that player. We're going to need him to be that player, and I know he can do it.
The thing about Quinn Hughes' leadership is he's not a loud guy. He's not a rah-rah guy, and he doesn't, you know, speak loudly and maybe even that often, but when he does, especially when it comes to talking about the state of his team, you pay attention. It's usually impactful. And that conversation with Ryan Leslie after the game, that was saying, hey, we've heard all the stuff. We've heard all the stuff that Elias Pettersson's had to go through, warranted or not, and we got his back. We believe in him. That is huge for any captain to say, especially in a market like Vancouver, where we're talking about Elias Pettersson, whether we want to or not. You know, whether it's at the neighborhood restaurant, whether it's at a Canucks game, whether it's here on UBC walking the campus, people are asking us, you know, what's to back his guy. That is something that you love to see. And there's a direct correlation where, you know, he has a great game. Elias Pettersson does. Key to that third period comeback and tying up the game. And the fact of the matter is, Batch, if this team is going to make the playoff this year, it's going to be down to, in my opinion, three players. Quinn Hughes, Elias Pettersson, and Kevin Lankinen. Those three guys are going to have to be your best players. So from that perspective, you know, having his back, giving his guy support is so needed here in the short term and the long term.
Yeah, absolutely it is. And we'll see the impact that Hughes has going forward for this team. Obviously, he's a crucial player for them. You're right, Lankinen and Pettersson as well. And, you know, Hughes' impact on the ice is big, but you're right. Like, the leadership side of it could have an even bigger impact off the ice. So looking forward, then, you have a good game against Calgary, and you get good news on some of your injured players. Tyler Myers didn't play in that game. Rick Tocchet upgraded him to probable to play on Saturday after the practice on Friday. Tyler Myers himself and the conversation he was having made it sound like he's going to be good to go. So that's good to see. And then defenseman Elias Pettersson was back at practice too after taking that high elbow from Connor Zary after his hit on Nazem Kadri. Zary suspended 2 games and DPD set to be right back in the lineup this weekend, which is big that you had 2 defensemen. There were injury questions around. There could be a temptation to be like, oh, of course, we get Hughes back and immediately there are other injuries on the back end. That's the way that it feels like it's gone all season long. Ultimately, though, that didn't happen, and it looks like, anyway, they'll have a fully healthy blue line to face the Blackhawks on Saturday night.
And Elias Pettersson, his comments in the post-practice scrum were short and sweet, didn't get too much into it, liked his hit on Nazem Kadri, and really didn't have much to say about the Connor Zary suspension either, but he's really showing how good of a player he can be. I love the fact that he's not afraid to step up and make hits. With Tyler Myers, we know how important of a player he is, especially shorthanded for this team. He eats a lot of minutes there. And both of these guys provide something that other defensemen on this team don't have, or maybe not as often. And that's, you know, Forbert is a physical player. He boxes out. But Elias Pettersson's got a nasty streak to him. Tyler Myers has a nasty streak to him. The other defensemen on this team have it to a certain degree, but these guys, especially this time of the year, you got to keep your head on a swivel when Elias Pettersson's on the ice. You have to make sure that you go into corners and you're keeping an eye out for number 57. This time of the year, that's really important for both of these players, and it's good news that they're not going to miss any time.
Absolutely. And now we look ahead to what is going to be a very important weekend for this hockey club. And not that we want to look past the Saturday night game against the Blackhawks, because at this point in the season, with where the Canucks sit in the standings, anytime 2 points are available for you, it's a big game. But there's a 4-pointer against the Utah Hockey Club on Sunday that, much like the game against Calgary the other night, is going to be pivotal in terms of shaping the way this playoff race could go forward down the stretch here.
That's right. And, you know, I think if you start looking at the biggest question in this weekend in games, it's going to be a test of the maturity of the Vancouver Canucks, where you don't focus on the Sunday game. You have 2 points. It's going to be, you got to pick up, you know, all 4 points in these matchups. The ones on Chicago, the game against Chicago, that's going to mean the same in the sense that you still need those 2 points. You can't take a step back. So for this veteran group, you have to make sure that you're going out there and saying, hey, there's no such thing as trap games. When you're fighting for a playoff spot, that does not exist, Batch. And of course, there's going to be a focus on the Utah game. We've seen Utah play Vancouver well this year. Their speed is a challenge for this Vancouver Canucks team. But out of 4 points, you can't ignore the fact that Chicago still has veteran players on their team that on any given night, they can score a couple of goals, they can get past you, and you can't take them lightly. I don't care where they sit in the standings. So big, you know, group of games. Utah, of course, is the big focus. But you look at, I think, the way that this team wants to have tunnel vision at this time of the year and focus on game to game, you have to have that approach here against Chicago. That is a trap game written all over it. But for a team that's in this spot, you can't have those.
Yeah, you can't afford to look past any game.
Nobody.
Right now. And, you know, we've talked so much about this playoff race this year, but you look at the teams that are in and around the Canucks. And obviously we just saw Calgary the other night. We're going to see Utah on Sunday. The St. Louis Blues have put themselves back in that conversation, too. Let's take a moment here to look through these teams and kind of try to handicap what this race might look like down the stretch, because there are pros and cons to all of these teams. They all have positives and negatives. You can create a pathway for any of them to get into that last playoff spot, but ultimately we know only one of them is going to succeed, and the Canucks need to try and make sure that they are the one team left standing out of what is shaping up to be a 4-team battle.
Yeah, and I mentioned the 3 players that you have to keep an eye on for the Canucks. Quinn Hughes' health is first and foremost. If he's on the ice, he's going to make an impact. You know that. So it's just a matter of keeping him on the ice. Elias Pettersson is really the X factor here, because if you can get production and if you can get him to win his matchups, even if there's no production there, are you in a position where he's playing a good two-way game and then getting timely goals, like against Calgary? That is going to be huge for this team. And Batch, Kevin Lankinen is going to be massive as well, right? We don't know what's going on with Thatcher Demko. Of course, you know, he took part in the most recent practice a little bit and then he left the ice. But beyond that, in terms of timelines, there is no suggestion of when he'll be back.
Rick Tocchet did say after practice that they hope he could be a full participant in their next practice. But with their schedule over the next week, they honestly may not practice for a week now. So, you know, Tocchet said we might try to replicate some practice situations for him. But ultimately, this is a team that's now getting ready for three games in four nights. And then right after that, they turn around and go out on a big, long road trip that starts in St. Louis on Thursday.
Yeah, there's a hope, but there's no actual timeline and not one available to us anyways at this point in time. So Kevin Lankinen is going to be that much more important here. How do you get him rest? How do you get him days and maintenance days? And how do you make sure that you don't wear him down? Because even the best goalies, if they're played too often, two things happen. You see some slips in their technique, and the other thing is you risk injury. So, you know, those three players will dictate it. If you look at the skill that Vancouver has compared to Calgary and Utah, St. Louis is in that conversation too, but I still think they're an outlier in the playoff race. I still like Vancouver, but it's about having those three guys clicking at a good level. It doesn't have to be maybe world-class level for all three of them, but can you maintain a standard that's going to power this team? If they can do that, they're the front runner, in my opinion, but we know that's been a challenge this year, especially for Elias Pettersson.
Yeah, well, yeah, and, you know, I think you're right to mention skill level, because I think, without a doubt, the Canucks have a more skilled roster than Calgary. You could make an argument with Utah because they've got some young pieces that are up and coming and really developing, but I think in terms of NHL talent that has more of a proven track record, you're looking at Vancouver. But is the better skill level going to be enough? Ultimately, to this point in the season, it hasn't been because of the Canucks' struggles for consistently. Like, the Calgary Flames are here because they're a lunch pail team. They worked their way into this spot. So can the Canucks use their premier talent level to get to a point where they can win games more consistently than they have this year? And as much as you're right to point out, like, Hughes has got to be healthy. Lankinen's got to be healthy and consistent. Pettersson's got to find his game and hit that level again. You need to see more of, like, the workman-like lunch pail kind of mentality for this team. And, yeah, urgency, which I think for the first time we really saw it in that third period against the Flames in particular.
And that's a mentality thing where Calgary, if you look at what they've been able to do, they've had that mentality where in most nights they're outskilled. In most nights they're a team that doesn't necessarily have the high-end talent. And look at their scoring list, right? There's not a player that's got, what, at this time, if I'm not mistaken, above 50 points, which tells you they have done it by committee. They're a low-scoring team, but they work hard. They're going to grind games out. And when we start looking at that, of course, that makes a big difference. But it's the teams that make the playoffs, the teams that have success, they couple both of those things. You have to have the right mentality. You have to have the right amount of skill. And, Batch, we can have this exercise on air. If you look at the top five players amongst all of these three teams, I think Vancouver, Quinn Hughes is the best player.
Yeah.
Right? And if we were having this conversation last year, Thatcher Demko would be in that conversation. He'd probably be number two. He's not right now. So after number one, what do we see in terms of the most skilled players and of these three teams? Normal years, I think Elias Pettersson would be in that conversation. Is he right now? Four games is great.
Well, and maybe the more important question is, can he be...
Sure.
Over the stretch run here, the final few weeks of the season, because
if he can, then we're talking about a great situation for Vancouver.
Yeah, but you know, I agree. You look, okay, Pettersson's probably in that conversation. Are we looking around at like Clayton Keller, obviously
sure.
a very skilled player on
Nazem
Utah.
Nazem Kadri's had a great year.
Nazem Kadri's had a great year. Robert Thomas on St. Louis. Again, they're kind of more on the periphery, but he's a player that
Dustin
brings
Wolf
it night in, night
in
out. Dustin Wolf, yeah, arguably the best goaltender in this conversation, not to take anything away from Kevin Lankinen, but what Wolf has done here in the second half has been very impressive. So, you know, it's interesting to bring it up in that way and talk about like the top five most skilled players amongst these teams and how many of them do the Canucks have. I think the more important way to phrase it, though, is when we get to game 82 and we look back, how many will the Canucks have had? And the more the merrier in terms of their hopes to try and get into the playoffs.
Well, I think we should have that. You know, I'm going to take this away as homework. I'm going to create my top five list. I think we just created one right there.
Yeah.
How does this change till the end of the season? When we're having maybe the introductory in the booth for the playoffs or a wrap-up of in the booth because the Canucks don't make the playoffs, you know, how does that list change? Because as of right now, my list, the way I construct it right now, would be Quinn Hughes. I'd probably put Clayton Keller, Nazem Kadri, Dustin Wolf, and number five.
Kevin Lankinen, maybe?
I think Kevin Lankinen rounds out the top five.
Or you could look at one of, like a Dylan Gunther, maybe?
Dylan Gunther, you know, there's also been some good defensive play from some of the guys in Calgary as well. I'm going to go...
Mackenzie Weegar, yeah.
I'm going to go... I'll probably go Kevin Lankinen on this one.
Yeah.
But does Elias Pettersson work his way into that conversation? Do we have other players, like, you know, if Calgary makes the playoffs, does Jonathan Huberdeau make his way into that conversation? Because he's been very good of late for them, too. So maybe that's my list right now. We'll circle back to that in a few weeks.
We could almost do a power ranking from here till the end of the season,
honestly,
and see whose stock is rising and falling each week. Because the one thing you know about a playoff race like this is it's unlikely to be straightforward, because none of these teams have been terribly consistent this year. Because if they had been, guess what? They'd be no doubt playoff teams. So it's not like we're going to expect Calgary to rattle off eight straight wins or even the Canucks to do that. It's going to be a lot of you win a game, you find yourself in a playoff spot. You lose a game, you find yourself falling out. And ultimately, it's like a game of musical chairs with who's going to be sitting on that last chair at the end of the dance after game number 82 in mid-April.
Scoreboard watching, I'm not going to lie. I was, you know, I usually do it anyways. It's our business.
Yeah.
But it's tough to watch every single game in the NHL, right? Sportsnet Plus does a great job of making the games available, but let's be honest. Do you sit down and watch every single one?
We had a former colleague who claimed that he did, but...
Yeah, I don't buy it, but that's a different story. But the condensed highlights you watch. I'm watching a lot more games recently because, scouting reports, and that's something that's important in our line of business, but also, they're skin in the game for the Vancouver Canucks, right? Last year, it was... How do you manufacture urgency? I remember having that conversation with a couple of players last year where, and you asking in scrums of, hey, you've got a lead here, but how do you manufacture that?
You've
urgency?
Locked up the division. You know what's happening. You know you've got home ice. How do you prepare for the playoffs?
That's not the case this year.
No, you don't need to manufacture it. It needs to be there.
It's right in front of you. It's right in front of you. So, you know, that's why every team, three or four teams, and you start looking at the Eastern Conference, it's even an absolute gong show out there because there's more teams in the playoff hunt. It's just great to watch. Very nerve-wracking for Canucks fans, though, because a night to night, your blood pressure's going up or down.
Yeah, well, it's a lot of fun, though, and it's something we haven't had in quite a while in Vancouver. And I was thinking about this before the game against Calgary, because I was trying to decide, like, how big is that head-to-head meeting with the Flames ultimately? And when you look back at, like, the last decade of this team, and I know there were a lot of years where they weren't in the playoff conversation, or, you know, we were talking about meaningful games in March, and you know, obviously they're playing meaningful games right now. It's been a while since we had a true playoff race that the Canucks were in like this. Either they were comfortably in the playoffs like they were last year, or they weren't even in that conversation. And 2020 was different because they were getting set up to be in that playoff race. They were right in the mix in terms of whether they were going to make it in or not. And then the pandemic hit, and ultimately they had the play-in series and beat the Minnesota Wild. And we know how that bubble run went from there. But it's been a long time since Vancouver has been scoreboard watching, has been this invested in a tight race for a playoff spot. And as much as it's nerve-wracking, it's one of the reasons that you love this sport and you follow the game too.
Yeah, it's been a while since they've had to really, you know, scratch and claw as an organization to get in. But they're not running on fumes like they were the previous few years when they didn't make the playoffs, where it felt like every game was game seven. We're kind of nearing that territory, but they're always behind the ball. Now they're in the thick of it. Remember, when Vancouver had terrible starts to the year, it felt like in December and beyond, they basically had to win every single game. It's not dire. It's optimistic in a way, where to say there's a nervous energy. And I think that's obviously for this team and the way that they had so much drama around the team, it's a good feeling to have. Hopefully they can continue it.
Yeah, but that being said, a bad week turns the temperature up on that a whole lot. And a good week makes you feel a little bit more comfortable. And especially you know, look at this set coming up. Three games in four nights, all on home ice. Chicago, a team you should be beating on paper. Utah, a team you're battling with in this playoff race. You really need to win that game. And then a big test against the Winnipeg Jets, who, guess what? If you get into the playoffs, if you win this battle with all these teams, there's your prize right there. One of the top teams in the NHL waiting for you in round number one. So, you know, we may have this conversation on the show every week going forward the rest of the season, but have a good week here. You set yourself up well. Have a bad week, maybe you're chasing, and maybe you are in that every game is game seven mentality. And the longer you can put off putting yourself in that scenario, the deeper you can get into the season without feeling like every game is must win. That keeps your hope alive, that keeps your belief alive, and that ultimately keeps your chances alive that much longer as well.
I usually look at the NHL season in seven-game installments anyways, but I think at this point of the season for Vancouver, when you've got less than 20 games, you're going to be looking at the next, you know, seven-game installments. Can you win the series, essentially, is what you're trying to do here. Can you win the seven-game or the five-game installment? That's got to be the focus of this team. Win the majority of the games that you're playing, and there's some tough ones there. Winnipeg twice on the calendar. You've got an East Coast trip, but can you grind out victories and start winning those five or seven game installments?
Well, and another game coming up that's going to be important too after the Winnipeg Tuesday game is St. Louis on Thursday. And as much as we're talking about they're on the perimeter of this playoff conversation right now, much like I'm saying a good week for the Canucks sure helps them, a bad week hurts them, a good week for the Blues could put them right back in the thick of this. And if you're the Canucks, you have an opportunity to kind of maybe not knock out one of the teams that's chasing you on one night, but you can deal them a big blow on Thursday if you could find a way to get 2 points in regulation against the Blues, much like you can deal the Utah Hockey Club a big blow on Sunday. And, you know, that's what highlights the next week of games for me, is those head-to-head four-point games against teams that are in the race with you.
What makes that those matchups challenging? Both of those teams are good off the rush. They've got skaters that can fly up and down the ice. When Vancouver's played Utah, they've struggled with that. And Robert Thomas, Jordan Kyrou have posed problems in the past for Vancouver as well, and this season. So, you know, that is an area that those are winnable games. You should be able to be very competitive, bit of a toss-up, but those styles make fights. And the style that both Utah and St. Louis, when they're playing well, that top line anyways, they do pose some problems, excuse me, for the Vancouver Canucks. So that transition defending is going to have to be a lot better for Vancouver.
Yeah, it certainly has, because we've seen them give up a number of rush goals of late. And, you know, credit them for finding a way to produce a little bit more off the rush, too, because that's been an issue for them. But, you know, that's another thing we could talk about looking down the stretch here, is the rush and the way the Canucks play both sides of that could be a big determining factor in their ultimate fate in the playoff race too.
Well, one thing that's going to help them is having Quinn Hughes back, right? You've got a threat of making a stretch pass, and Quinn leads the league per game in making the most completed stretch passes. So now you've got teams on their heels a little bit. And even in the most recent practice for Vancouver, they're trying to, you know, have plays. And a really interesting technique by Adam Foote, where he was getting his defensemen to basically kind of jam the puck, but really poke it up into the air, like project it upwards. So a bit of an alley-oop play from the defenseman off the boards, which is something that some of the guys, you could tell, Mancini hadn't done it before. He was struggling with that first and then eventually figured it out. So they're trying to find different ways. If you're up against the boards really tight, how do you still potentially launch a counterattack the other way? How do you potentially give your forwards a way to attack in the neutral zone? I found that really interesting, where Adam Foote was executing it perfectly, and the other defensemen are trying to learn this tactic of, you might have a man on your back and you're essentially still trying to launch a counterattack the other way, helping your forward hit that neutral zone with speed. So they are trying new things that we haven't seen in practice.
And we also saw on that same drill forwards waiting in the neutral zone and practicing taking those pucks down so that they can settle those plays, and that it's not just a play where you concede possession even if you do clear the zone, but that your forwards can gather that puck, turn up ice, and ultimately create scoring chances. All right, we're going to step aside for a moment here on In the Booth, recording today from the University of British Columbia, and we'll get into the mailbag when we return right here on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to In the Booth on Sportsnet 650, your official home of the Canucks. Brendan Batchelor and Randeep Janda with you. As we always remind you, if you're listening to the show on the radio and you've missed part of it, well, it lives as a podcast as well on the Canucks Central podcast feed. You subscribe to that, you get In the Booth with Randeep and myself every week. You get Canucks Central every weekday with Sat and Reach, and you get every Canucks postgame show with Sat and Bick as well. And Randeep, In the Booth is brought to you by Bells and Whistles.
Catch all the action, hockey, football, soccer, and more with happy hour pints for $6.75, 3296 Fraser Street, just off of Kingsway, right in the Fraser Hood.
All right, let's get into the mailbag. You sent us your questions for the show this week, and we will do our best to answer them. The first question comes in from Woodrow the Eligible Bachelor, who points out that March 14th is Pi Day, and asks what our favorite type of pies are. So we're starting off with the hard-hitting questions here in the mailbag.
All right. This is at the time of recording. It is lunchtime. I have not had lunch. I'm starving. So thank you, Woodrow, for this question. It's going to make me even hungrier. Favorite type of pie? I got a couple options, all right? I'm sorry. I love food so much. For anybody that knows me, knows I like spicy food. So you throw a little bit of, yeah, just, I'm okay with it. I'm a vegetarian, so any vegetarian pizza or margarita, but you add a little spice to it, I'm happy with it.
But, so you're going pizza pie to pie pie.
I was going pizza.
Oh, there you go.
So that's the type of pie. But actually, yeah, now that you think about it, I'm an apple pie guy. Yeah. I love apple pie.
Yeah, I was thinking, I didn't even think pizza, but you're right. Pizza is technically a type of pie.
Sure.
I was thinking, you know, do you go sweet pies like apple or cherry? Or do you go savory pies like a shepherd's pie or a chicken pot pie or something like that? So I guess we'll see. As the music here blares in the background with the UBC women's team playing some tunes as they take part in their practice, we will soldier on here on In the Booth, coming to you from the campus of the University of British Columbia this week.
Pecan pie as well. I'm a big
pecan pie. Yeah.
That's my go-to. But you've got the English background. You got to pick a savory pie. What is it, shepherd's pie?
Yeah, we make shepherd's pie in our home once every couple weeks. It's a great winter weather dish. If it's cold outside, it's rainy. You come inside, it's warm. You get the potatoes. You get all the vegetables as well as the meat. So, yeah, shepherd's pie, that's probably where I'll have to put my vote. Okay, let's turn our attention to the hockey questions now. Interesting one from Princess Erica, regular listener, who writes in and says, do you guys think of yourselves as Canucks fans first and foremost, or do you more so think of the Canucks as part of your job, which you happen to be fans of? Hopefully that question makes sense. She says, sorry if the wording is odd. No, I absolutely get it.
And we get this question a lot.
Yeah, I think we both grew up as Canucks fans, right? So in many ways, it's a dream come true for us to be doing this now as our jobs. But I don't really think of myself as a fan anymore. Does that mean that I don't want to see the team do well? No, it doesn't. But our relationship to the team, from a personal perspective, in terms of fandom, I wouldn't call it fandom anymore.
No, and I think you work long enough in this industry, whether it's as a local reporter or a national reporter, or a broadcaster, at some point, I don't want to say you get jaded. It's more of that you understand one thing is a job and your fandom is your fandom. And we talked about this a couple episodes ago as well, Batch, where, you know, teams that you cheer for, you're all in. You can understand the roller coaster ride that hockey fans and Canucks fans have, but I don't have that same roller coaster as I do with my other teams that I follow. Obviously, with the Canucks, it's the day-to-day. I also cover other Canadian teams on Hockey Night in Canada, so there's a little bit of a balance thing there. So I don't see myself as a fan. I see myself as a broadcaster. But, of course, there's a soft spot. If you grew up in a city and you've seen the team go to the finals in 94 when I was a fan, 2011 when I was entering this industry, of course you have a soft spot for this fan base, for this team, and for the city.
And, you know, ultimately, we want to see the team do well, not just because of growing up here, following the team, interacting with fans all the time, but it's also good for our jobs and our radio station and our line of work if the Canucks are playing well and winning games and everybody's invested and listening and fired up about the team.
And people just smile a little bit more when the Canucks are winning, right? So that's always nice around the city as well. People are in a better mood.
Next question from Mike on Twitter. What forward position, left wing, center, or right wing, do the Canucks need to address the most in the offseason? And I think this is a pretty easy answer. Because of JT Miller being shipped out, it has to be down the middle if they can address that position in the offseason. And ultimately, you know, that's a conversation we're going to have way further down the road because there's still plenty of time left in the regular season here. But if you look at, you know, if there was one position you would have liked them to bolster before the trade deadline, or one position you think they're going to have to add to in the offseason, it has to be down the middle of the ice.
No doubt. And this is a player that, A, you missed the production from JT Miller, no doubt about that. But you also need somebody in that top six that can drive play. And JT Miller was so good at that, playing alongside Brock Besser, where right now we have a lot of conversations around Brock Besser. Part of that is you're lacking a play-driving centerman, and Filip Hedl is a part of that equation, but I think most of this market has been pretty clear on Filip Hedl. On a good Vancouver Canucks team, he's a 3C, right?
Maybe, and he'd be a great 3C, right? You could argue he'd be one of the best 3Cs in the league.
I think that's a very fair argument, but that's where you need to get if you're going to be a strong team and a competing team in the Western Conference, and ideally for a Stanley Cup. So the center position is definitely what you're looking at in terms of addressing, whether it's free agency, and I say that kind of, you know, reluctantly, because yeah, that's a dangerous game, right? When you're talking about 28, 29-year-old centermen, there's a lot of hard miles on the guys that will be available. And I look at that free agent group, and I'm not all that excited. And with the profile of this team, I think you need somebody in your mid-20s. So addressing the center position is key. And here's the other thing. If you've got too many centers, that's never a bad thing. Look at the Tampa Bay model of building teams, where they were just load up in centers. These guys can play on the wing. If you've got enough centers, you can interchange them. You can plug and play them wherever you want. No team is ever going to complain about having too many centers. If you have too many wingers, that transition to the middle is a lot tougher.
Well, and also, you know, I mentioned Miller already being traded. Hugh Suter doesn't have a contract for next year. So those are a couple of holes that you have to fill down the middle. And ultimately, Suter might resign, might remain a Vancouver Canuck. But as of this moment, answering that question, it's pretty obvious where they need to bolster themselves the most. And, you know, it'll tie into our next question as well in terms of how this management group has kind of reshaped the makeup of this team.
For sure. And I think one thing we also have to address is in the pipeline, there's not many centers coming up. Atu Ratu is obviously the one we look at. He's when he's played at the NHL level, he's done some good things. But is there room to grow? Of course. He's a young player, so that position of need, internally you don't have that person coming up, even at the AHL level. But then even beyond that, you're going to need, to your point, you've got an impending UFA and Pugh Suter. So, yes, that is surefire the number one position you're looking at.
And I alluded to our next question. It comes in from Marcus in Gibson's, who asks, how would you rate Alvin and Co. and their job of rebuilding the decor? And do you think they're done? And, you know, this is what I was talking about, where now we say, okay, they need centermen. We wouldn't have said that when those guys took over the team, because they had JT Miller and Elias Pettersson and Bo Horvat down the middle. They have prioritized bolstering the blue line. I think they've done a really good job of it when you look at how much better the Canucks have been defensively in the second half of the season, and in particular since Marcus Pettersson arrived via trade and Elias Pettersson was promoted from the AHL to essentially be a full-time NHLer. So, you know, I know that management isn't necessarily the most popular in the market right now, and there are things that you can fairly criticize them for coming out of the trade deadline, but the way they've rebuilt the blue line is not one of them. They've done a good job, and, you know, to the part of the question about do you think they're done, I don't know if you're ever really done trying to make your team better, but if you're asking me, are we looking at the six defensemen on this roster right now that might be the same six defensemen next year, I think there is a very good possibility of that.
Yeah, you've got a rock-solid defensive unit, especially in the top three, right? Remember, you've got Hronek, Marcus Pettersson, and obviously Quinn Hughes, which most teams, you need to have that top three, top four locked in. And I go back to, you know, the real successful teams of maybe a different era, but you need to have guys, at least three players that can play 20 minutes easily. And all three of those guys I mentioned can do that when they're 100% healthy, or in Quinn Hughes' case, when he's not even healthy, he's pushing 30 minutes. That is an excellent starting point. Now, beyond that, Elias Pettersson has shown that he can play at the NHL level. He's got that absolute like powerhouse kind of feel to him. That hit on Nazem Kadri, I loved it. And there's a reason Nazem Kadri didn't do anything back. He gets it. He's thrown that hit numerous times. Like, that's a respect. That's a tip your cap to a good hockey player standing me up at the blue line. Now, Mancini, really liked what I saw against Calgary with him as well, Batch. And he's just starting to show elements there where maybe he's not playing the full 82, but is he going to be somebody that can fit in on the right-hand side long-term? So we've mentioned five there. I think Derek Forbert is another player looking at UFA status.
But we've heard that the organization probably would like to have him come back as a veteran guy that can insulate some of those young guys further down the lineup.
For sure, and you're not talking about your top 4D. This is adding essentially that Ian Cole impact going forward, but hopefully retaining him. And the guy I've missed is Tyler Myers. And Tyler Myers has been, you know, I know there's been a couple of hairy moments here and there, but he's been an absolute, you know, veteran presence back there. He's been stable for the most part, and in some games you could argue at some point, especially early on in the year, he was one of their better defensemen when the rest of the team was trying to figure it out. So I look at that, and especially the players that are looking beyond this year, how do you look at that and say that's a, you know, Tyler Myers went from being the number two defenseman on this team to being the number four now, and if one of these young guys takes a step up, he might even be a number five in a year.
Yeah, well, and another name we need to bring up is Tom Velander, who we could see before the end of this season even. Yep. Coming out of college hockey as a former first-round pick of the team. So the present and the future are pretty bright on the blue line. And, you know, if you know, they can sort out some of the injury things, right? Like, Kevin Lankinen's been great this year. He's signed long-term. But if Thatcher Demko can get back to full health at some point, then you really like the baseline that you could build off of having that set defensive core, having some consistency in the crease, which is why, coming back to the last question, it's all going to be about improving the forward group, improving down the middle, finding more scoring for this team in the offseason.
Yeah, essentially what you've done is you said, hey, we're going to take a power piece from the forward group and shift that to the back end, right? Long story short, there's other pieces involved, but you take JT Miller and turn that into Marcus Pettersson and Victor Mancini. Now, you still have that gap in that forward group. And this is where, you know, free agency, if you get the right player in that forward group, sure, you don't have to pay anything. You just pay money. It's easy for me to say. It's not my team. I don't own it. But you write a check, and that player comes in. In free agency, I just don't see that center. So that's why this team is going to have to be creative when it comes to potentially trade. So we'll see what happens. There's potentially a playoff push coming before that, so we'll focus on that. But the off-season is always intriguing.
Well, and Mike, who asked us the question about which center or which forward position to prioritize, follows up and says, what are your top three free agent targets for the Canucks? And this is where we could have the conversation about how they might need to bolster their offense via trade rather than through free agency. Because if I'm looking at center icemen, if I'm looking at, you know, guys that you might want to bring in and have an impact up front. You know, Mitch Marner is a guy, but he plays the wing, so that's not really helping at center. And I think, you know, the vast majority of people around the league expect him to re-up with the Toronto Maple Leafs. What about John Tavares? He's an aging player. Do you really want him to be penciled into a 2C role at this point in his career? Not necessarily. So, you know, I know you've got the list in front of you, Randeep, so you can rattle off a few other names, but it's not like there are a bunch of clear, bona fide, obvious targets for the Canucks to go after to try and solidify themselves up front and at center ice. Sam Bennett might be the best of those, but he's going to be highly sought after around the league, assuming he doesn't re-up with the Florida Panthers.
Highly sought after, and I love Sam Bennett as a player. I think, you know, that whole 18-year-old Sam Bennett and couldn't do a push or a pull-up, that is long gone. This guy is a heart and soul player. We saw that in the Four Nations face-off. But on top of that, this is an individual that is going to play hard. He's going to play hard in the playoffs. But here's the thing. Regular season, that's not his forte. You know, he's not necessarily, he can't play that way 82 games in a year. He's not going to give you that production. And he's not a stats player. He's a heart and soul guy. So if you're looking for somebody to be that 1-2 punch with Elias Pettersson in terms of point production, I don't know if Sam Bennett's that guy. In the playoffs, I'd love to have him. Regular season, he has other drivers on his line in Florida who do a great job of scoring goals. Matthew Tkachuk, and now, you know, Marchand is obviously going to be a big part of that as well.
Yeah, I wonder if you do go for Sam Bennett if you're the Canucks, it's more to be a matchup centerman, right? Yep. Like, if Sam Bennett is your second-line center next year with Elias Pettersson as your first-line center and Philip Hedl is your third-line center, then whoever plays with Bennett, those guys are getting the matchups. They're playing the top players on other teams, and you're freeing up Pettersson's line and then, by extension, Hedl's line to try and create the offense. So, you know,
but
Sam Bennett...
What's the price on that, though, right?
Yeah, that's Sam Bennett isn't going to create the offense himself, but does he give your offensive players more room, better matchups, more opportunity to fill the net themselves?
There's a lot of talk about Toronto making a push for him. Obviously, his connections to Brad Treliving, they're going to give up the salary of John Tavares this year. So there will be competition. I like him as a player, and I like that matchup aspect. It frees up Elias Pettersson, but there's going to be a lot of competition, to your point earlier. A couple other names that might give you short-term contributions. You don't have to think long-term with them. Matt Duchesne's had a resurgent time in Dallas. He's a little bit older, like in that John Tavares role. You know, is this a guy that can be a second-line center for you? He's really resurrected his career in Dallas. Question is, does he want to go away from Dallas because it's been a good spot for him? You know, you start looking down the list, there's more players that are now in their older years, but they've opted to go places and stay there. Another guy I look at is Claude Giroux. Giroux is another player for on a 1 to 2 year deal. He might work. But he went to Ottawa, took less money, wanted to be there. I don't know if that's the player. Mikael Granlund's another player, actually, that, of course, there's Marcus Granlund that played here. He didn't have the same success that maybe he had in other markets. But Mikael Granlund has been consistent over the last 2 years, predominantly playing on the wing this year, but he can feature down the middle, too. So kind of a lighter matchup center. He's got offense in his game, too, but can also play down the middle and give you maybe a kind of a matchup center light. It's not his forte, but he can play that role.
Yeah, and ultimately, you know, one free agent that they might have to replace is Brock Besser if they don't extend him in the coming weeks here before he is available to go to free agency. So as much as we've talked about the importance of the center ice position, and there are some options out there for them, they might also need to bolster their wings. So, you know, having a guy like Granlund who can play either of those roles and have that flexibility could be important for this team going forward.
There is one name that I don't think he's going to feature in the 2C role, but maybe in the 3C role that has been linked to the Canucks in the past. That's Jack Roslovic. He's also a UFA. So if you're looking at a player that may potentially be able to replace a Pew Suter depending on the Canucks' pursuit of him or the Canucks liking this player, we've heard those links in the past. This is he's currently in Carolina, and that's an player that I'd look at to say he's yet again also resurrected his career. Remember, after he left Columbus, people were kind of wondering what he was going to do, but a 30-point player at this point in time. But that's another guy that I would say maybe not in that 2C spot, but if you're replacing Pew Suter, Roslovic could feature.
Yeah, he certainly could. So thanks for those questions, Mike, as we look ahead to the offseason with those. Let's bring it back to the present, though. Justin in East Van writes in and asks, what's your opinion of Elias Pettersson's recent offensive production? Is this production sustainable over the remainder of the season? And he highlights in particular the last four games where Pettersson has 3 goals and an assist. So a point per game player since the Minnesota game for Elias Pettersson. And I think it's probably fair to say, and I put this out on Twitter the other night, that the game against Calgary, his best of the year, you could argue, certainly his most impactful in terms of the importance of that game-tying goal in the third period. And, you know, there's been lots of conversation on our airwaves this week about, is this Elias Pettersson returning? Is he officially back? Is this just a good sign? Is he trending in the right direction? Ultimately, we're going to have to wait and see. But if Elias Pettersson could be a point per game over the final 5-6 weeks of the season here, that massively boosts the Canucks' chances and ability to potentially get into the playoffs.
Yeah, in the short term, it helps you in the playoffs. Getting to the playoffs, you can feel confident that you have a star player rounding into form. Maybe not there and at the maximum level that he's shown in the past, but is he taking steps in the right direction? In the long term, it gives you a little bit more confidence to say, okay, maybe there is light at the end of this tunnel. Maybe it's not all doom and gloom as we've heard over the last number of months, and this player still has it in him. The four games, and the raw production is important, right? Being a point-per-game player, what did we talk about a month ago? The bare minimum is getting back to that spot to create points. We can talk about progress. We can talk about, you know, good things that happen in a game. But in this game, he is paid, and every player is paid for what they do in terms of raw production, what they do in terms of putting up points. Now, with Elias Pettersson, if you get that, that's a starting point. What I've liked about his game, though, Batch, is there's moments of assertiveness, and they were flashes maybe earlier this year. And now, all of a sudden, we're seeing those moments last longer. In the last four games, outside of the Dallas game, I would say three of those four games had, you know, periods where Elias Pettersson was the best skater on the ice. And against Calgary, in that third period, shots were 17-4. You know, high dangers were well in favor of Vancouver. A lot of that was because of that line. So are you having shift after shift where Elias Pettersson is grabbing, you know, the game by the scruff of the neck? I don't think he's full on grabbing the collar yet, but he's threatening. And we saw a little bit more of that in the past four games. That's, I think, the most important thing is that assertiveness, that confidence, the smiling and having fun. Even during practice, saw him switch sticks with Teddy Bluger as the media scrum was going on at the most recent practice. And that was something that where you didn't see that a couple months ago. You didn't see moments where he was just having fun with things. And if you see it in practice, you see it in the game, you see that assertiveness. And that's something that I think is really important to his game. Assertiveness and a big smile on his face. He's having fun again.
Well, and Rick Tocchet talked about this after practice on Friday, where he mentioned the game-tying goal specifically about how Pettersson held onto a puck, made a play, but then got his feet moving, got to the net, and ultimately is there in the right spot to knock that rebound home. And, you know, it's not just like rebounds are going to fall onto your tape if you don't put the work in. So the fact that he was confident enough handling the puck to make the play and then recognized where he had to be on the ice, moved his feet, and got there, those are very encouraging signs, regardless of the production. And look, the production's great. He's paid a lot of money to score. That's going to be important for a team that struggles to score here down the stretch if they want to get into the postseason. But it's those underlying things. It's the things that we weren't seeing from him earlier in the year that he's getting back to doing that are more encouraging, because it's those small details that are going to lead to big opportunities and big production, you hope.
No doubt. And there's still moments in his game where you're saying, I wish he'd move his feet a little bit more. I think he's a little too stationary. But those moments are becoming less and less. So we're starting to see him do, you know, the things that, as you mentioned, holding on to pucks, getting to those areas where the puck is going to go. And in that Calgary game, in that third period, the puck was finding its way to Elias Pettersson, and he was doing something with it. And that's something that I think in previous games, when the puck was coming to him, kind of felt like it stopped. It felt like it was not moving, and now he's starting to think ahead. He's making – it just feels like the game is slowing down for him, which is something that 2-3 weeks ago, the game was really fast for him. It was too fast for him.
And in fact, he was slowing the game down.
Yes.
By not making proactive decisions with the puck or moving his feet to get to the areas he needs to.
Exactly. And that's changing. And once that happens, I think that's a huge, the points will come. Once you start doing that, the points will come. And we're starting to see that now.
All right, that does it for this week's episode of In the Booth. Again, if you missed any part of the show, you can get the podcast on the Canucks Central podcast feed. Vancouver is in action Saturday night against the Chicago Blackhawks. A 7 o'clock face-off pregame show gets underway at 6 right here on Sportsnet 650. And Randeep, you and the guys will have it as well on Hockey Night in Canada Punjabi. Tell us about your show this week.
That's right. Game 2 will be Chicago versus Vancouver. Game 1, Battle of Ontario. Leafs can't find wins right now in March, and Ottawa has won a few games. They won 5 in a row as they try to push towards the playoffs. So we got a couple of great games this weekend.
And I will have the call with Landon Ferraro right here on Sportsnet 650, the Canucks and the Blackhawks. And then we'll be back together for the big matchup on Sunday, 5 o'clock, Vancouver and the Utah Hockey Club.
And before we go, I'll be hosting the Canucks for Kids Fun Telethon on Tuesday night. So I want to make sure that you can donate right now. So get those donations in. It supports an amazing cause, community programs all over the province, not just in Vancouver. So that's my quick plug before we leave the show this week.
Absolutely, and that's for Tuesday night's game when the Canucks host the Winnipeg Jets. But it's a big weekend for Vancouver. We'll see how they do, and we'll talk to you again next week on this show. This has been In the Booth on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.